RadioAlbion.com.
We're knights of the round table, we dance where we're able. We do routines, recorder scenes, with footwork in bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot, we eat ham and jam and spam a lot.
Hello and welcome to the Radio Albion Roundtable. As you probably can guess, this is Grandpa Dan. And I'll be honest, it's always fun to do a roundtable show. It isn't a roundtable this time. It's more of a coffee table. I am, thankfully, joined by Dr. Matthew Raphael Johnson. Obviously, as you all know by now, that Sven's not with us. That's why it's not much of a roundtable. Circumstances being what they are, Dr. Johnson, how are you doing today?
Well, under the circumstances, not too badly. I do have to say publicly, I said this on my show that's going up on Wednesday, but you have, Grandpa Dan has sacrificed himself. He sacrificed his sanity. He sacrificed his tether to reality in taking over the programming and posting duties for a very large, very difficult website and platform. So yet again, I am publicly thanking you for preserving me, for shielding me from having to deal with that stuff.
Yeah, and so when y'all listen and you notice the quality drop, that's the reason. It is on me, but I am doing the best I can. We're just kind of house sitting here. We're looking forward to the day when Sven gets back and the quality will go back up. I'm just trying to figure this out and go as I can. And like I say, we're house sitting. I was sorry. I know Matt, you and I were talking earlier that, we want to keep our shows going. We want to keep the content. We're going to try to keep content going up on the side. And like I say, I really think of it as house sitting. We're just kind of watching after this, until Sven gets back. We're of course going to talk about this. I've avoided talking about it a whole lot. Obviously, we didn't want to talk about it much leading up to him, being sentenced, because I think we all pretty much felt that the less said, the better. But now that we're at where we're at, it's time. I thought it'd be great for us to sit down and discuss it. I thought before we get into that, Matt, I'd just let you go ahead and say, just what kind of person Sven is. Because, I know for a lot of people, you hear people on the radio, you see these fake people on TV, and, they do the whole, they're going to report on the plane crash, so they put their sad face on. And then they got a heartwarming human interest story, and they switch their happy face on. They're fake. They're fake people. And I know for me, I've known Sven for years, and I mean, he's real. I mean, the way he comes across on his shows and stuff, I mean, that's who he is. And I just personally wanted to say that, he's the type of guy that, really, there's not like when he quits recording, there's this really ugly side that comes out and you're sitting there going, what a phony SOB. He's not. He's 100% genuine. And just in my opinion, of the utmost character.
Yeah, we live in an age of the soundbite and the TV character, the talking head, people who are actors in mainstream media who do what they're told, because there's a lot of people willing to replace them, and make-believe stories, make-believe crises, make-believe scandals. But other than the truth of what we're dealing with, Sven is gaining nothing from that. He has dedicated his entire life to this platform and assisting others in editing. Now, this is not an easy job. There's so much. This site has so much on it and is large, both in terms of its membership or viewership as well as its sheer size. And so much has been pioneered on this site, and every bit of it, I just send him the MP3 of my show and a write-up, and he does the rest. It's not an easy job, and clearly he is being forced to pay for it, but it's fine. And his character is one of, he's a virtuous man. I trust him. I trust him with my money. I trust him with my kids. I trust him with anything. He is the least harmful person I can ever imagine, with all his health problems, back problems, all of this, which has been dogging him for so long. He is often doing this in pain. And he doesn't care. He will do whatever it takes to get this message out, to keep it clean, to keep it at a high level of, highbrow intellectual work. I said on my show that's going up, I said, you know, it's like the National Review for nationalists. That pretty much that level of, you know, none of the name calling, none of the vulgarities that I've never used, like you've never used. You know, it's the exact opposite of what he's been imprisoned for. And that comes directly from him. This is his institution. This is his platform. And clearly, it's large enough and substantial enough to threaten the system where they had God knows how many officers and spent how much money trying to get him behind bars for things that, again, I'll talk about it on my show. I'll be with Andy Hitchcock in a few days. Very vague and by any standard, very harmless.
Well, and that's a good segue. I thought one of the things we'd get into, because for you and I both, we live here in the U.S., and we hear about these speech laws, you know, in Britain and in different countries in Europe, and they have these various speech laws. And this particular law they were using against Finn is some incitement to hatred or incitement to cause hate or some other gibberish sounding law to the rest of us. And the thing always hits me about these things is how vaguely they're written. I mean, they're written extremely vaguely. And when this first came up and Sven was facing having to go to trial and we were talking about it and he was, you know, basically reading this law out to me, and I'm basically a big error code on my face because it just doesn't compute. I'm like, well, I mean, how do they determine this likely to incite hatred? I mean, how are they exactly going to do that? How are they going to prove this? Now, as we know, they went back and they took 15 different podcasts and they convicted him on 10 and acquitted him on 5. They went back, we're talking 5-6 plus years ago, on all these different shows and threw this out here. And again, they do not produce. And this is what I kept telling myself. I don't understand. Well, I do understand. And when I say I don't understand, it's just frustration. It's frustrating because I do understand what they're doing and why they're doing it. But they bring these charges and they don't produce a single. They're using hours and hours of shows and they can't produce a single person to come forward and say, yes, I was going along with my normal life. I tuned into Radio Albion. I heard this guy talking about history or whatever. And next thing I know, I just night and day, 24 hours a day, my eyes would stay open because I just couldn't shake this emotion of hatred. They didn't produce anything like that. They couldn't produce a single person to say, well, somebody was driven to hatred by the content on Radio Albion. And as a result of that hatred, they came and, I don't know, mowed a swastika on my grass or something. You know, they couldn't produce a single person. They just played these shows and then said, see, this could be deemed offensive. Don't you think this could sound offensive to somebody? Dr. Johnson, before I go off monologuing forever, I'm sure you're dying to comment on how, on these wonderful speech laws they've got.
Yeah. And, you know, we've thought these things for a long time. We always knew that this was a possibility. And we know really what's behind it is that as the system goes deeper and deeper into crisis, the ruling class gets less and less secure. As the crisis deepens, their need to silence the opposition increases. And that's what that's what's happening here. There's a definite connection between, you know, standing at the door of economic collapse on the one hand and having to shut down anyone who happens to point that out and the real reasons for it on the other. The vagueness is what strikes everyone here. And you have that with the so-called Violence Against Women Act I've written on in the past in the U.S., where the crime comes not so much in the intention of the person. Let's say sexual harassment or something like that. It's in the mind of the so-called victim. She has the right to interpret his words in any way she sees fit. Of course, normally you have the concept of mens rea, or, you know, the guilty mind. You know you're doing something wrong. Your intent. I mean, crime is based on intention, not necessarily consequences. But, you know, you consider something like one of my favorite phrase from this law. This is part of the Public Order Act, by the way. You're talking, you know, the most bizarre, you know, this is pure Franz Kafka. And I got to go back and reread the trial because that's, I know this, it's the same kind of thing, but it runs precisely the way a Stalinist show trial ran. Everything was decided in advance. They either got a confession or, you know, the judge would monologue, and always the use of vague terms. But we already knew that things like, you know, racism and sexism have no functional definition, because the minute you draw boundaries, most of what they want to use this for won't fall into it. But when you hear phrases like incitement, you really think of one thing. You think of some guy going to a mob saying, this guy in the storefront over here hates you and he wants to kill you. You kill him before he kills you, and they burn the place down. This is what most people think. Now, that was a crime anyway. But that's when I think of incitement, you know, it's a crime in most places. But this specifically is aimed at whites, daring to criticize, not even so many. You know, remember what Sven's defense really was. A huge chunk of his defense was that this was never aimed at, you know, non-whites or Jews or whoever. This was aimed at those who allowed all this to happen in the first place, including, you know, the court. This is aimed at journalists. This was aimed at a ruling class that is bringing migrants by the bucket load over here for cheap labor. And, you know, as I'm going through his defense, both written and verbal, I'm saying, well, I think that's the problem. The fact that he's doing this without emotion, without getting angry, without calling names, laying this out using only government statistics, by the way, or statistics from another official source, and laying this out in really what amounts to inassailable logic, that's why he's a threat. The idiot out in the cornfield doesn't threaten anybody. It's somebody who is you know, the greatest activists are those who simply expose the regime for what it is, rotting out the intellectual foundations of it. That's why this harmless, nonviolent, a man who's incapable of violence, a man like that was targeted. You're right to say that there was no real crime because there was no real evidence. There's no, you know, a crime has to have a victim and it has to have damages. That's in both England and America. Well, there was no victim here, and there sure as hell was no damages. So by itself, it's not a crime. Now, it used to be, at least in the U.S., that if a law is vague, uses vague, undefined terminology, then it can't be a law. And it can't be a law because you don't know if you're violating it or not. And Sven, and all of us now, especially in Europe, are in the same boat. You have no idea what counts as a violation. It's only been very recently with the Violence Act in America that was never even debated. It was part of a big crime bill that Clinton passed in 1994, buried in a huge, you know, omnibus crime bill. That's now it's begun here. And I talk about on my show, I talk about Edgar Steele, the first guy who really rammed it home that this, you know, they're gonna kill us if they need to. And I don't know if you've read any of the mainstream articles on Sven, but I couldn't get through the first paragraph. They know that they have a tightly controlled media that will write exactly every sentence. I mean, I can't believe that there are semicolons that are incorrect. I didn't think that was possible. But everything in these articles were incorrect, exaggerated, or completely made up. And beyond that, hearing the police excoriate Sven, clearly they haven't read or listened to a damn thing, but calling him every name in the book, and then the judge throughout calling him vile and disgusting, as if an idea can be vile. I remember the judge's rant at the very end, which in and of itself is an appeal. Clearly the man was never objective to begin with, hence the show trial comparison. But he never once, in his diatribe against Sven, ever said that these ideas are false. He basically said, I just don't want to hear them. Never once. So we all know the Holocaust trials, you know, David Irving, the ones in Australia. Truth is never a defense. So even the fact of the matter doesn't work here. All these guys did is that these ideas are absolutely disgusting and vile. Not that they're stupid, not that they're illogical. Even going so far as apologizing to the jury that I can't believe you had to sit through this. And it's just that effeminate, over-emotional overreaction to what is very logically laid out. This is, he clearly, by his very reason, he threatened the system to the point where they're willing to go through all of this. And what the heck does prison have to do with anything? How is sitting in a room for however long he's going to be there, how is that he's going to change his mind in there? Or is it to make sure that those, at least in Britain, who might think of saying the same thing, won't say it? And I think ultimately, silencing everybody else, creating a deliberate aura of uncertainty, having no idea if you're obeying the law or not, knowing there's only one group of people targeted here, that's the ultimate purpose, at least in the short term, that's the purpose of these laws in this prosecution.
Well, it's always clear when they do have these vaguely worded laws. I mean, if you can essentially be accused of inciting an emotion, in other words, when these laws are this vaguely written, it's obvious that they want to be able to accuse you and put you in jail, whoever they want to. And they just need the excuse. You're talking about the different media stories, and I, like you, I couldn't stomach a whole lot of it. I really couldn't. I saw a few, and in one of them, you were talking about the media lies, because the media lies go hand in hand with it. This is how, like you said, they have a tightly controlled media. This is how they get away with it. This is how they do it. If you actually had an independent media, they would be like, well, hold on a minute. Yeah, but that's never the case. And I saw one story in the quote unquote journalists, because we don't have reporters anymore. We have journalists. And the journalist in their piece said, Sven is a self-proclaimed white supremacist and Hitler lover. Now, I've known this man. I've known this man for a lot of years. I've done, I don't know how many hours of shows I've done with Sven over the years. And, you know, I'm getting old. Maybe my memory's slipping, but it's not. I've never once heard him self-proclaim to be a quote-unquote white supremacist. He, like myself, he has no idea what the term means. It's another one of those name-calling terms they throw out there to shut down debate. You're a white supremacist. What does that mean? What? Nobody knows. It's just a name-calling. But that one line really stuck out to me. Just the way they just blatantly lie. They don't lie by omission. They don't simply lie by omission. They don't take the truth and twist it around and tweak it a little bit. They blatantly lie. He is a self-proclaimed white supremacist. I've never heard the man self-proclaimed to be a white supremacist. I've never heard the man tell me what it means, because he, like the rest of us, has no idea what it means. It's just a name. It's just a name they call you. And of course, like I say, the media thing, that's what enables. That's what enables all of this. You can always see the inversion. And like I say, what is this supposed to accomplish? They put the man in jail. And they put him in prison, and like you say, it's not like he's going to change his mind. But as you said, it's that chilling effect. It tells everybody else, especially in Britain, to shut up. I think the message is actually intended for a broader audience than simply Britain. And we'll try to get to that here in a minute and see what you think about it. But yeah, it's to tell everybody else to shut up. It always comes back, and you hit on this, and it just always comes back to, they'll call you every name in the book, but they won't call you a liar. They can't call you a liar. They will call you everything else. They will call you all of these names. They'll claim you're disqualified. You shouldn't be allowed to speak. You shouldn't be allowed to do this. You shouldn't be allowed to do that. But they can't call you a liar, especially so often, as you say, uses their own statistics. Pretty soon they will just, and we're getting there. They'll just quit putting out the statistics. And you were talking about you're supposed to have a victim for a crime. I thought you were supposed to also be able to face your accuser. Well, who's your accuser? It's the state. They didn't have a victim, so they couldn't bring someone forth, say, yes, I accuse this guy of doing this, and I am the victim of it. It's absolutely crazy. I thought maybe we'll shift a little bit, because people hear this, people here in the U.S. hear this, and they're like, well, That's the UK for you. They're crazy over there. We're America. We're America, Dr. Johnson, and we got the Constitution. We don't have to worry about that. But I'm going to get into this here in a minute, but I think Americans have more to worry about than what they think they do. I think it is a very naive view to think, oh, well, that just happens over there. That they're the only ones. Now, it's done a little differently here in the U.S. They don't have necessarily the blatant anti-free speech laws. They do give the Constitution a tiny, tiny fig leaf. It's not a whole fig leaf. It's just a piece of a fig leaf. They do give it that, and that little bit is quickly being stripped away. They go about it a little bit different, but it doesn't mean that same mindset, that same quote-unquote law doesn't apply to Americans. What do you think, Dr. Johnson? You think Americans, we're all right because we got the Constitution and the flag and our freedoms, and that's why I'm going to go out here right now and I'm going to think of that. What do you think that's going to fly?
Yeah, that's your typical response to everything. They could be head first into a volcano. Well, at least I have the Constitution. And they tend to say it exactly like you said it, too. Conservatives seem to think that everyone plays fair, like a football game. Everyone has to follow the rules. And the regime doesn't have to follow anything. After the lies and storytelling of COVID, they could witness. I mean, they've seen the manipulation and the complete falsification of election results at all levels. Even some mainstream people, including Time Magazine, were talking about it. And this is the same person that'll say, well, things will be better if we get our people into Congress. The level of naivete, the sheer ignorance, and just being totally bereft of ideas is staggering. These people have no idea what's happening to them because they don't want to. Now, if you have a strong middle class, you have a lot of people who are affected negatively by this, but they don't want to lose a job. They don't want to get kicked out of the country club. They don't want to get kicked out of the homeowners association because all these things happen. So they keep their mouths shut. The problem in 2023 is now you have a lot of these people losing their homes in huge numbers. No one's really reporting on it. But when it comes to inflation, and you say, you know, lying about statistics or just not publishing the statistics, that's absolutely true. I believe almost nothing anymore that comes out of the Bureau of Labor Statistics. So many very good economists, people like Paul Craig Roberts, have explained in depth, and he was Assistant Secretary of the Treasury, how they manipulate figures, how every few years they have a new method of calculating something like unemployment or inflation or even economic growth. That if he just recently said, you know, if they use the method in 1980 of figuring inflation and unemployment, unemployment would be something like 25% and inflation would be something like 15-17%. But they keep figuring these statistics in such a way that it makes the regime look better. And most people won't read beyond the headline. So the headline number is the best one. And that's now cited as something that's true. Even academic economists will start using these numbers in their calculations. So nothing turned out to be correct. And for some reason, even some people on our side will point to a newspaper and say, well, what do you have to say about this? As if their job is to inform you. They're not in education. Outside of the ideology, their purpose is to engage readers. It's strange how journalists operate. You know, journalists, they say they write about something like China or Russia. Well, they're not political scientists. They're not historians. They're not economists. They have no training in any of that. Their job is to find an angle and write a story. That's how they're trained. That's what their purpose is. So you can't trust any of these things. I've seen the most wanted in the state of Texas, and they're all, most of them, almost all of them, are Hispanic males, and the race is specified as white. You know, there's a million different ways, just like in economics, they're going to start manipulating those statistics as well. So whatever we come across, we have to pretty much double it against ourselves. You know, black crime is X. We know it's X times two. And I don't. Bill Clinton tried to eliminate racial statistics and the FBI and crime reporting, but for some reason that didn't take. I think they're still doing it. So, and the other problem with the conservative type, libertarian type, who points to the First Amendment, is what counts as speech? Edgar Steele, I mentioned him already, who was, you know, killed in prison in Idaho, said, well, they're just going to redefine what speech and violence is. And even the judge hinted at that in Sven's case. If, you know, freedom of speech, if people assume that talking about, you know, politics, economics, religion, which is why that amendment exists in the first place. But this isn't included as speech. When we criticize a system, whether it be immigration, whatever issue, it's not speech. It's an act of violence. I had what we call today critical race theory rammed down my throat in grad school. This is 1995, and I had to read Words That Wound, which is the big book, you know, their seminal work in critical race theory. No one else had heard of it at the time. And it got to the point where any pro-white, any kind of nationalist utterance from a white person in general is an act of violence. It's an act of oppression. And Steele said from the podium, and he said to me personally, he said, all they're going to do is redefine speech or certain types of speech as an act of violence. You don't have to actually punch somebody, but this is a verbal punch and therefore should be treated accordingly. And, you know, the way that the mainstream journalists depicted him, their job is to make it look like he's an unhinged lunatic. So they'll talk about white supremacy and neo-Nazism, the SS and Himmler, and having no relevance to anything. But the point is, because this is what they're trained to do, to create an image in the mind of the reader and use all of the symbols, use all of these emotion-evoking and provoking terms and phrases. Their purpose, of course, isn't to give information. Their purpose is to evoke this emotional, visceral reaction in the mind of the reader. It's like advertising. You know, it's the same kind of thing. That's the position that we're in. That's how this is going to already. And not to mention, the regime claims, you know, the private sector, which, of course, rules America, they don't have to listen to any of this stuff. So you'll lose your bank accounts. You'll lose everything, your job. Even saying the very mild and calm and collected things that Sven said, they won't put it like that. They never say what some racist actually says. They just say it was racist utterances and threats of violence. And that's all they have to do. At my own alma mater, University of Nebraska, after Charlottesville, what they did to some of the kids who went there, doctoring pictures, and these guys all had to drop out. And that's how they do it. So even if they don't classify speech as violence, there's a million other weapons. There's a million other ways they could silence people. You know, the Constitution is a piece of paper, and it has no more force than that. These are the same people who can look at the COVID restrictions, which no government, even under a state of emergency, has any right to do. I went over the emergency legislation, but it didn't matter. Presidency rules by executive order. It's been happening for a very long time. They don't need legislatures anymore. And people got used to this. People got used to absolutely arbitrary actions, especially, you know, institutionalized during COVID. That's one of the purposes of it. So now this kind of arbitrary action is normal. No one's going to question it. So you have that, and you add media and academic treatments that make, you know, I could say the most mild thing, and it's very easy for one of these guys to make it seem like I'm threatening an entire group with violence. And, of course, they can invent witnesses. There's a million things that they can do short of simply just banning what I have to say. There's a million ways they could torment anyone here with, you know, using the private sector, just actually excommunicating you from society. And those people who are more weak-minded, they're going to lash out. So now they have a real reason to put the guy in prison. This is a psychological, almost, you know, a public narcissistic means to torture those who are exposing. But as I mentioned before, as more and more people are out of a job, as more and more homes are lost, as the middle class shrinks and shrinks and shrinks, a lot of these weapons aren't going to work anymore. And don't think that the regime is not aware of that.
They talking about things you say, I saw a story. It reminded me. I saw a story this morning because we're already expanding and moving beyond that. And I don't remember the guy's name. I hadn't even planned on talking about it. But you saying that reminded me of some guy working for some football program, if it was at the college level or the professional level. And he just got fired because somebody went through his Twitter feed and he liked some certain tweets that supposedly were racist. Of course, they didn't tell us what the tweets were, but they were racist tweets and he liked them. So you see, that was enough. So he didn't even have to say anything. He had to just click the like button. And of course, I think the guy tried to go around and do the whole, you know, delete that and hope it wouldn't, you know, of course, then they just smell blood in the water. I really want to hone down on this because you were talking about how conservatives are so ill prepared and they really are, bless their hearts. You know, the run of the mill has the best intentions, but they are just so very, very clueless. And people, by and large, are really clueless. And I saw a story, and I'm sure you saw it as well, Dr. Johnson. I believe it was last week. And I saw this story. The quote unquote President Biden, they medicated him up and rolled him out there and he did this speech before this black college where he once again, for the umpteenth time, proclaimed that the greatest domestic terrorism threat that the U.S. faces is white supremacy. You know, and he's made this statement several times. Now, these people are liars. You know, we know they're liars. But at the same time, when they keep making this statement, you know, which is really a very threatening statement, I think, in a lot of ways. I'll get to that here in a minute. I think a person does well to take them seriously. They keep making it a point. Now, we've had FBI whistleblowers that have come forward and said that they're under all of this pressure. These field agents are under all this pressure. And I'm no big fan of the FBI, but all these field agents are under this enormous pressure to go find some white supremacist terrorists. And they're like, we can't find any. But they're like, if you want the budget, if you want the money, you better go find us some white supremacists. Damn it. We need white supremacists. Go find them. Go find them. Even if you got to make them up, go find them. Even if you got to create them, go cultivate some, plant you a field of white supremacists and fertilize that thing and water it and take care. We need some white supremacists. We need a crop of white supremacists so we can have something to go on about. Now, like I say, this story about Biden making this announcement isn't what struck me. Because like I say, he has said this and people in the Biden administration, I always think that's a funny slip, by the way, because you'll read these news stories and they admit he's not running anything. You know it, Dr. Johnson. I know it. We all know that Joe Biden isn't making any of these decisions. But it's funny to watch the media make that tacit admission, because all of these stories will always say the Biden administration. Not Joe Biden, the Biden administration. It's like this more or less quiet admission that, yeah, he isn't running anything. You have all of these different little factions and all these different little, no doubt, unpleasant people, the screechers from Twitter, the eternally offended. They're all in the positions of power. And all these people are making these decisions. Now, when I heard this story, like I said, it wasn't a surprise. They've had him go out there and make this announcement several times. What really struck me, and this gets to the point you were saying about how conservatives don't have a clue. And honestly, I think a lot of people don't have a clue, is in the story about this, as is so common the case. So they put up somebody's Twitter post of the video of Joe Biden saying this on Twitter. And I don't have a Twitter. I'm not on social media. And I like it that way. But, you know, you can click on this and still read the responses. What struck me about this story was the Twitter responses. Joe Biden stands up there now and saying this is a great domestic terror threat. I mean, those aren't friendly words. They're saying you are the enemy. You are the enemy. And you go and you read this post had, you know, I don't know, hundreds, thousands of comments about this. And what got me, what really struck me, because that's something you should take seriously. The President of the United States comes out and announces this group of people, who once again is ill-defined, are this great terror threat. They're a terror threat. They could take your freedoms at any minute. You've got all these people responding to this. 90% of the responses were from conservatives. But whether it was the 10% who I call the that's right crowd, they usually have the Ukraine flag in their biopic and that NAFO thing, which is grassroots Twitter people who happen to support every line from the State Department. You know, whether it's that group or the 90% of these conservatives, what really struck me is nobody was asking, what does that mean? If this group of people is the greatest threat facing America today since 1776, who are these people? Let's have this defined. I'm reading through all of these conservatives, and most of the responses are so low tier. You know, I have low expectations. I do. I have very low expectations of people, but this even exceeded in a negative way, my poor expectations. The responses were all like, well, it looks to me like the Democrats are the real racists. You know, the Democrats were the real Ku Klux Klan back in the day. Seems awful funny to me that Joe Biden's up there talking about racism. He's the real white supremacist. Joe Biden ought to be wearing a Klan hood, looks to me. Oh, look, here's an old picture of him with Robert Byrd. You know, Robert Byrd, he used to be in the Klan. You see? It's such low-tier memeing, low-tier understanding of these things. And like I said, I have pretty low expectations. I really do. But to see not a single, I scrolled through all of these comments. Well, not all of them. I couldn't go that long. But I scrolled through a whole bunch of comments. And not a single person, not one, said, okay, hold on. Who's he talking about? Who's he talking about? Wait, who are these white supremacists? What defines that? Of all these people responding with the Democrats are the real racists and just so in such a blatant and absurd way, missing the point. Because this is a big deal. It's one of those stories that flares up in the headlines. People tweet about it for a day or so and it goes away. But I mean, I that really struck me. You have the president of the United States making these broad pronouncements of this group is demonized. And when they start demonizing, they dehumanize people with these names. History tells us that tends to lead to really dark places, because if people think of you as human beings, they might be reluctant to do some of the things that might get demanded in the future. So they have to start dehumanizing you. You're not really people. You're this label. It really, really struck me that nobody had the sense to say, well, wait a minute, who are these white supremacists? You talked about, and I'm going to hand it to you in a minute. I know I'm monologuing, but you talked about a while ago how these people are wanting to hold on, you know, to what they got, hold on to what they have. We understand that this is anti-white rhetoric. This is the anti-white, I call it the anti-white race hate agenda. Everybody's got a different name for it, but we do understand that at its core, it is anti-white. And, you know, when you get down to this, everybody's going to be on the list. It's like conservatives and even the ones that support this, the anti-white people that support it, they have it in their mind. Like you said, they think this applies to somebody else. You see, and as long as they don't go, well, I'm not those people. They think they're going to at least, it's like now they're just fighting to be lower on the list. You know, they're still on the list. They're just trying to be lower on the list. And of course, the anti-white people that screech and support all of this nonsense, they foolishly think that they're not on the list. They're on the list. If they're white, they're on the list. Now, they may be down on the list as long as they're useful. But if the agenda is an anti-white agenda at its very core, then they're on the list. They just vary where they're at. So these people are not fighting to not be on the list. They're on the list and they're too foolish to realize it. They think that if they stay in denial, well, maybe they can stay down low enough on the list that this stuff is always going to apply to somebody else. I gave up long ago on the idea of people, quote unquote, waking up, because I just, like I say, my expectations of humanity have just kept shrinking and going down over the year. But I have to say, even with that, you know, these people really need to wake up and understand what's being said, or at least at the very minimum, start asking questions like, who is he talking about? But of course, you know, these are the same people that will agree and tell you that there was this massive election fraud in 2020 and then turn around and say, but we're totally going to vote Trump in 2024. So you have to remember that as well. What do you think? What do you think, Dr. Johnson? White supremacists, who are they? Are they any under the bed right now?
Well, first of all, you don't have to apologize for speaking. You have a lot to say, and it's always good stuff. So you don't have to do that. You can monologue, as far as I'm concerned, all you want. And I'm, you know, it's not like I'm exactly innocent of that myself. But the only positive thing out of this is that since these things are repeated over and over again, and as everyone with white skin at one time or another is going to be accused of it, it's going to get to the point where it starts being cringy, where people just start rolling their eyes when it's so clearly a way to get out of you know, being the losing side in a debate or something like that. We've all been called this so many times that it's meaningless. You know, it's like you have a parent that yells all the time. After a while, you're just going to tune them out. It's not a big deal. Rather than the parent who does it only once in a while, and the world's going to end. We just kind of tune all this nonsense out. It's not an argument. But I think one of the worst psychological torments someone can have is what we call cognitive dissonance. And unless you're a sociopath, then it doesn't make any difference. But for normal people, cognitive dissonance is being forced to hold two diametrically and mutually exclusive positions at the same time. And it's you know it usually at a subconscious level. You spend a lot of time denying it, but it starts affecting things. It's like putting diesel in a gas engine. Eventually, this is going to break down. So you have to be you're told that this is the greatest domestic threat imaginable, white supremacists. And yet, for the last however many decades, you've seen the only people who've been burning down whole cities have not exactly been white. And regardless of what the media says, you know that that's been true for a very long time. Guys my age still remember the Rodney King nonsense. So they have to hold those two things, that this is the worst threat, and yet we've never really seen them do anything. And that's one of the reasons you're going to get, you know, when we speak to them, they tend to lash out. And it's the result of this. You know, what are they going to do? You think of your stereotypical middle class guy, say in his 40s or 50s, you know, even if they agree with us, well, what are they going to do about it? They can't go to work and say, oh yeah, here's the American Free Press. They know what's going to happen to them, which is a terrible torment to begin with. They know at some level what the truth is, but they're not really allowed to say it. They're not really allowed to believe it. Look at these guys going to jail because of it. I don't want to get tarred with that brush. You know, at one time or another, we've reached a lot of these people, but that just makes it worse. Now they can't even plead ignorance, but they also can't talk about it. And that creates this kind of walking denial where they'll say something stupid like this. Oh, you know, there are people worse than me, so don't throw me into the gulag quite yet. But the vague terminology is one of the key takeaways here. And the Soviet example, you know, the law was, you know, anti-Soviet agitation, which came to mean absolutely nothing. It's whatever the regime didn't like. The show trial accusation usually had something to do with working for American intelligence or British intelligence. After the war, it was working with the SS. None of this stuff. Actually, that's why Solzhenitsyn went to the gulag. He was just a POW for a while in a German camp, and that was enough, working with the Germans. So this is, and same thing for the terror in the French Revolution, the Great Leap Forward and the Chinese one, the you know, slaughter of Catholics in the Cromwellian state in the early stages of the British Revolution. These revolutions all have the same trajectory. They have to, if they're going to rule, you can't have huge numbers of dissidents. You have to use, and now, of course, we have the psychological establishment and the financial establishment. The regime now having synthesized them all into one, what we call the regime now with a capital R, they have so many weapons. But if there's even a handful of us out there, you know, the truth can spread very quickly, especially in a time of crisis. And my thesis has been for a long time that this is based on the fact that Western elites are aware that they don't have much time. You know, in 1989, 1990, the Soviets went from a huge empire to nothing almost overnight. Things can change very, very quickly. And they're aware of what, you know, this war is costing them. There's no money, all the debt ceiling stuff, you know, and another feature of cognitive dissonance is the idea that the U.S. can impose this liberal will abroad with no resources, having had a bad history of losing wars and being driven out of places and claiming victory, lying about casualties, all that stuff. The average American, normie, sort of, you know, semi-patriot, conservative, is walking around as a bundle of contradictions. And they don't have the means to work it out. They don't have the knowledge to work it out. They don't have access to the resources to work it out. So this is the kind of thing that you're going to get. The regime is well aware that they're playing with fire. That how far can they push before economic, you know, the economy being hollowed out is going to lead to these guys simply not caring anymore. It's not just the economy. You have guys losing their kids. The divorce rape, the new IRS aggressiveness, you know, you can't have highly intelligent, motivated people with nothing to lose. So it seems that the goal now is just asset stripping. It's like the pyramid scheme in post-Soviet Albania. That's all it ever was. And then when it collapsed, these guys fled the country. That's all they're doing right now. And so in the meantime, they need to save their skins, throwing as many white people in prison as they can. My God, they were putting people out of prison because of COVID. I mean, serious felons to be replaced by the Sven Longshanks of the world. So we're talking about some of these people. You're right. They do mean well. And they really believe this is going to be solved with elections and open debate. As if this is how these revolutionaries, you know, only in America can you have a full-blooded leftist revolution from, let's say, 1970 to 2020 and have no one notice. You can have an economic depression and have no one notice that. Only given the psychological manipulation of a controlled press, entertainment, media, can you have a situation where they are mangled and abused and they don't know. Or they rationalize, or they make excuses, like any abuse victim will do. I see these people, not like, I mean, you know, I agree with Mencken on a lot of what he said about them in the 20s, but I see them as victims of abuse, victims of exploitation and alienation, poor souls that we, in whatever way we can, have to slowly bring them out of it. And that's, you know, I see that as my job and delegitimizing the whole edifice. But this is going to increase as they realize that you can't throw people out of work in huge numbers, people who are smart and motivated, replacing them with non-whites and expecting nothing to happen over time. They know that there's a fuse here and it may never blow. They may be just so worn down and exhausted and bamboo, who knows? But a system like this can't last forever. Whoever can take advantage of a collapse is going to win. And with our lack of any kind of institutional foundation, it's going to be a huge struggle. But that's how the regime rules. And they know what a chance that they're taking because that center, a center based on this nonsense, can't hold.
I want to stamp my Rodney King card by saying, can't we all just get along? If you were alive during that, you get the reference. And I think the economic thing is the key to my personal belief, because everybody's got a theory. It's all we can do. We got no crystal ball. But my personal belief is you look at where does their power come from? Because, you know, the ruling elite, the regime, as you call them, and I admit I've stolen that term for lack of a better term to use. this is, you're talking about a small amount of people. When you look at it reflected in economics, you have the 1%, or really the fraction of a 1%, that is strip mining. Like you say, they're strip mining assets. They're strip mining what's left of the economy. And all of this money, they're getting richer. Everybody else is getting poorer. But therein, I really do believe, lies the weakness. Because there is a whole lot more of everybody else than there is of them. So where does their power come from? Their power comes from money. Their power comes from the financial system. And as we're all observing, and it's going to be harder and harder for people to deny, it is in a downward trajectory. I always simplify. I try to simplify things. I do. I think that it's so important to explain things in a way where people can understand. And, you know, as I think that's what we do here, Dr. Johnson, all of us here, when Sven was with us and when he gets back, we don't want to talk about the man like, you know, he's dearly departed here. But our goal is to explain things in a way that people can understand. These people have power, okay? These people have power because, not because they can come and force you to do something. They don't. They don't have the ability to do that. They have power because they can tell other people with guns to come and force you to do something. That's why they have power. Now, I always say, what happens when the day comes that the men that they send with guns, they haven't had a paycheck in a month because the financial system is in free fall and on fire? Then all of a sudden, they don't have guys to order around to come and kick your door in and drag you before a court. They don't have that because the guys with guns aren't willing to do it anymore. The point being that their power comes from money, and the financial aspect of it is definitely on a downhill. My personal vision, I think, I don't see the United States, and I'm not going to get way off on this, but I don't see the United States holding together as an entity. I do believe we're looking at a breaking apart, but that's not today's topic. I wanted to circle back again on why this is important for people to understand what we've been talking about here. And that is, you've got to understand, and we were talking, Dr. Johnson has said that, you know, the Constitution is a piece of paper. We're putting this in a way where people can understand it, because you need to understand the reality around you. If you think, because if you don't understand the world around you, you're going to get in trouble. You are going to get in trouble. If you think you have freedom of speech, and that means you can go and say whatever you want to, and there will be no consequences for it, you're going to get in trouble. A good example of this are the January 6th people. They thought they had the right. Hell, they were called out there by the President of the United States. They're, God bless America. They're out there waving their don't tread on me flags and Blue Lives Matter and all of the rest of it. They were under the impression that they had the right to assemble and to protest and for the government to hear their grievances. And what has that gotten them? They have expanded this thing now. They've announced they're going after people now that weren't even there. Not weren't in the building. Not the ones that not in the building, that didn't even show up. They've announced they're going to go after people who were, you know, basically on social media going, yeah, go in there, yeah, whatever. Now, those people thought they had the right. See, they didn't understand the reality, and they really had no excuse. Dr. Johnson said earlier about, you know, when it's not happening to them, they think it doesn't count. The January 6th people, and don't get me wrong, I'm not downing these guys. I'm very sympathetic towards them, but they had no excuse, because, you see, before that, we had what? We had Charlottesville, and we saw how that played out. The one-sidedness of who was prosecuted, who was persecuted, and who was not. That was for everybody to see. But you see, those people, the January 6th people, convinced themselves, well, those are a bunch of white supremacists or whatever the media is telling me. The same people who will tell you, on the one hand, by the way, that they don't believe anything the media says, will then turn around and say, well, the media says those are white supremacist Nazis, so that's not me. And because they were in denial of this reality, they went to Washington, D.C. on January 6th, and they got in trouble because they didn't understand. They don't have that right. We are in every way, shape, and form. We are in a post-legal society. The legal system is not, if you're still living in fantasy land, the legal system doesn't work the way you think it does. And it's not just in Britain for Sven Longshanks. It's here too. People watch these dang TV shows. You know, they watch these TV shows like Law and Order, and they think like these prosecutors are concerned about whether or not they're going to get the right guy. And like you see those shows and they get so far and they're like, oh, my gosh, we've got the wrong guy. Turn him loose. We've got to restart the investigation. They don't care about that. They care about a conviction. They suppressed video evidence of the cops leading the January 6 people around like tour guides because they didn't care. They knew they were innocent. They just wanted... They wanted the conviction. So it matters because you've got to understand the world around you. It's not fair. It's not right. It's not an actual functioning system. I could use all sorts of colorful language to describe what it is, but it is what it is. It's the reality. It's not sustainable. It is going to get to a place. It's going to get worse before it gets better. It's all going to collapse, in my opinion. And then maybe something better will come out the other side. I try to be optimistic. But you have to deal with where we're at right now. And you don't have those rights. If you go out there and think you got the right. If somebody said, we're going to have a big protest. We're marching on Washington, D.C. tomorrow. Come on, Dan, get in the truck. Let's go. I ain't going because I understand. I understand. This is a post-legal society. You need to understand the world around you. The Bible, and I'm paraphrasing off the top of my head, the Bible says, when evil times come, a wise man hides himself. You got to understand the world around you so that you don't get yourself into trouble for something silly, because they'll come after you anyway. Sven did nothing wrong, and he didn't do anything silly, and they still went after him. If you go out here and think you've got all these rights when you have all of this evidence over and over and over that you do not indeed have these rights, you're going to get... I'm telling you, folks, you're going to get yourself in trouble. I'm not telling you to be cowardly. I'm not telling you to be, I'm telling you to not be stupid. You need to understand the world around you. And those who are listening to this show, I'm really not talking about you when I say you. We're kind of talking about the people that showed up for January 6th. The people who sit there and make moronic statements about the Democrats are the real racist when you have the alleged president of the United States using a blanket statement. They're calling people domestic terrorism threat, and they don't have the sense to ask who's he talking about. These are the people that are going to go up there and they're going to decide, well, I got the right to say this. I got the right to go do this. And they don't understand. They don't have that right. I'm guessing you have some thoughts on post-legal, the post-legal West, Dr. Johnson.
Well, post-legal, post-truth is absolutely right. And that's really what we've been talking about now for God knows how many decades. I mean, I've watched this revolution come to fruition for over 30 years, 33 years now, since I got started. I've had a front row seat to the total dissolution of any even a grasp of reason, of truth, of critical thinking, which has been absolutely shut down, and they shut it down by simply redefining it. The January 6th people, you brought up a great example because I've got hundreds of these sorts of people. They figure, well, we have every factual reason to be here. We know what the truth is. We have mountains of evidence. There was protests summer of 2020 where they burnt down the state house in almost all 50 states. So this is nothing. Yes, but in Charlottesville, we had video evidence that these guys were innocent. It didn't matter. We have video evidence that these guys were let in. And really didn't do anything wrong when they were in there. It doesn't matter. They went there thinking that we certainly have a constitutional right to do this. We're going to listen to what the police say. And now they've been persecuted beyond belief, while those who burnt down cities in June or July of 2020 are lauded as activists. And they're going to have to deal with the fact that the America that they were so proud of no longer exists. The flag that they have on the back bumper of their cars stands for leftist revolution, feminism, abortion, gay rights, all that stuff. That's what it stands for. And it's really hard, even for the best of people, it's really hard to wrap your brain around the fact that that's what it is. You're living in the Soviet Union. That using the same tactics, but a bit less ham-handedly, but using the same tactics and using the same economic levers of power and the same sloganeering and the same controlled media the same politicization of psychology and everything else that they did decades ago here at a much higher level of sophistication. And certainly people who, you know, what we do here is explain these things. Why spend the money and the resources and the vehemence to send a harmless man like Sven to prison? Why? That's the question that we've been answering here. We answer in so many other publications in the past. That's our job. That's what we do. We all know dozens, if not hundreds, of those very benighted conservative types. And unfortunately, we have to speak with them. You know, we do talk about politics with them. We know a bunch of them. We have to do what we can to show them that, you know, the America that they grew up in, depending on their age, doesn't exist. It's a Soviet state whose ruling class is aware that it's falling to pieces. It's no different than a wounded animal, cornered, is going to lash out. They can't wrap their brains around controlled elections. They can't wrap their brains around the dollar collapsing. They can't wrap their brains around secessionism. The fact that, you know, they're willing to – remember the conservative reaction to the January 6th, that very day and a few days afterwards. Oh, it's Antifa dressed up in our outfits. They said whatever they could to avoid the fact that their people are getting arrested for nothing except ideology. If you remember that, that was all over Facebook. It was, you know, the conservatives were talking about this. It was Antifa there. They were using all kinds of, you know, pictures from years ago. They couldn't handle that fact. We have to cut through this cognitive dissonance. And the truth is that they're going to be arrested just like we are. The regime doesn't make any distinction between a Pat Buchanan on the one hand and Grandpa Dan on the other. You know, mainstream or not mainstream. They don't make any distinctions there. They're going to find out who you are, and they're going to do what they can to torment you, at least while they have the time, while they have the power.
Yeah, you're just jockeying for position on the list. We're going to wrap up here before too long, but you were talking about these people and these contradictory views. And one of the, I see them illustrated. I drive through town, and you'll see somebody, and they'll have these stickers in the back window their truck, because you live in Texas, you got a truck, and on the one side they'll have a, you know, the blue American flag with the wide blue stripe, because, you know, I love my police. And on the other side they'll have one of those, you know, come and take it stickers. And I always want to ask them, I always want to say, well, if they decided to come and take it, who do you think they're going to send? You're gonna have to pick between your stickers. Now We'll close out on this last point, and really it probably won't take long, because you've pretty much hit on this already, Dr. Johnson, but try to be on a positive note. And these, whether it's you look at the way things are going in geopolitics, which is your area of expertise, you know, with their war with Russia and China. And I always tell people World War III is already going. China's fighting it on the economic front. Russia's fighting it through this proxy war and blowing up the U.S.'s weapons and deteriorating NATO's ability to make war. This is a subject for another time. But they're losing. The point is that they're losing on these fronts. And when you look at these actions, such as what they've done to Sven Longstrom, like you said, what real threat was he or is he? And you have to ask yourself, are these actions of people, does this come across to you or I, just in your common sense, does this come across as the actions of people who feel like they have everything totally under control? When they put in the media these ridiculous lies about, you know, how the Ukraine, any minute now, they're fixing to drive the Russians all the way to Moscow. I mean, it's just ridiculous that it doesn't come across as people who have everything under control. And it's the same with this. When they go out here and find this guy who, as we've covered today, is absolutely no threat. He's an outstanding, upstanding person of highest quality. And they're so insecure in their positions of power. Because people that don't have power, we tend to look at these people like they're almost godlike. I don't, but I mean, a lot of people do. They look at people like this and it's like they're almost godlike. But you have to ask, Are these the actions of people that have confidence that they're in control? They have confidence. They've got everything in control. Everything is going their way. Dr. Johnson's already hit on it. The clock is ticking. You can tell by the way their actions, they, to a certain extent, they understand that they're up against the clock. I believe that clock is largely economic. But you have to remember, these aren't the actions of people who are 100% in control and don't feel threatened. They've got this in the bag. So, yeah, I do think there's something to be positive, as positive as you can be about these sort of subjects. But these aren't the actions of people who feel like they've got this done. They've got this, boy, everything's going just lickety-slick, just according to plan. I don't think they do. Dr. Johnson, I'll let you go ahead and finish out with your thoughts, and then we'll wrap up.
Well, I started off by talking about that not every, even people who are very sympathetic to us, not everyone can talk like this. Not everyone can be out in the street. Not everyone can be passing out the American Free Press. But there are ways to be an activist that don't involve that. And one of those ways is supporting Sven Longshanks. We're going to have all of the links and on the description here. It's going to be on my page, all over the place, to write him a letter of encouragement, to put a few dollars on his books. We have the address, you know, to send him an actual hard copy letter. Remember, the prison always reads these things. Keep it light, keep it encouraging. I don't know what his mental state is right now. And I know the first week is always the hardest. We're right at a week now. Anything to make sure that he knows he's not alone in one way, or I don't care if it's just a card, make sure he knows he's not alone, because the psychological torment now he's going through, being behind bars by himself, God knows who's surrounding him now. That's torture. That's legal torture, not to mention his health problems on top of all of that. So sending him something, I don't care how simple it is. If you go to the prison website, we'll have a link for that. The prison tells you how to do it. And letting him know he's not alone, that's a tremendous kind of activism. And it will show what sort of person you are if you're willing to give even a small amount for the sake of making him, keeping his chin up.
Absolutely. Putting my letter in the mail tomorrow. So yeah, we will have the, I can't guarantee y'all the links are going to work. Y'all going to have to copy paste. If they don't work, look, they're going to be there. Y'all just going to have to copy paste. Y'all don't know how amazing it is. I can even make this halfway work. But no, in all seriousness, yeah, do that. Like I said, I'm putting a letter in tomorrow. I'm going to try to get a letter out to him at least once a week. I've already, as soon as this went down, I had several people email and contact me how they, you know, understanding the importance. Mail is like a lifeline to the outside. So it is important. If you just don't understand, and it is a lifeline to the outside. So try to make the time. It's not hard. As Dr. Johnson already pointed out, look, all the mail's read that comes in. Don't try to be edgy posting here. You know, just send something, a note, a card, a letter of encouragement. It'd be a good thing to do. I'm going to have the links for that stuff. Like I say, whether they work or not, the information will be at the bottom of the page. So thank you, Dr. Johnson, for joining us for the roundtable. Again, I wish it was under better circumstances, but I do appreciate your time and sitting around having this discussion. And thank you. I want to thank all of y'all for joining us. At some point in time in the future, we will have another coffee table roundtable. And we look forward to the day when it actually becomes a roundtable again and Sven gets back to us. So we look forward to that. And again, be sure and catch Dr. Johnson's show, The Orthodox National, my show, of course, Parish of the Patriots, and all the other great content. We're going to keep the content coming, so be sure and tune in for that. We'll see y'all next time. Thank you.
Well, that's the round table. We dance when we're able. We do routines and all the scenes of footwork and bed cable. We dine well here in Camelot.